Chapter 3, Washington and New York. The Rubber Crisis of 1942. The military situation of the Allied powers in 1942 was superficially a desperate one. After the winter of 1941 to 1942, the German armies continued their advance across Russia. The destruction of most of the American Pacific Fleet at Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, had made the Pacific a virtual Japanese lake. America was suddenly faced with a problem that was, for her, a strange one: lack of a crucial raw material without which no war effort appeared possible. Japan controlled what had been the source of 90% of America's rubber, Malaya and the East Indies, and the source of the other 10%, Central and South America, was hopelessly inadequate. The manner in which America extricated herself from this grave situation will go down as one of the great ironies of history. America, one would expect, could not resolve this problem because nobody in America had thought in terms of autarky. Standard Oil of New Jersey had the essentials of the IG Farben-Buna rubber process. This was on account of a series of agreements between the two companies, commencing in 1927, covering technical cooperation and mutual licensing arrangements. Standard was quite interested in Buna rubber because it could also be made, more easily, from oil. The cooperation continued, with the consent of the German government, right up to the outbreak of war and even, to some extent, after the outbreak of war. The American side benefited hugely from these arrangements, but the German side got almost nothing out of them. The outbreak of war in September 1939 between Germany on the one hand and England and France on the other, threw these arrangements between Farben and Standard into a certain amount of legal confusion, which need not be explored here. Farben wished to clarify the confusion, and so a meeting was arranged at The Hague on September 22, at which certain legal arrangements were made. Standard official Frank A. Howard was puzzled by all of this, quote, "I could not escape the conviction, however, that the Germans themselves were the only people who could profit from a military standpoint by leaving the relations between Standard and the IG in the situation into which the war had thrown them," unquote. The arrangements that had been made at The Hague soon proved to be inadequate, so it was decided in the spring of 1940 that another meeting was necessary. Howard saw another motivation for an additional meeting, quote, "We intended also to ask them to supply some of their detailed designs of manufacturing equipment and technique for Buna. We hoped that IG might obtain permission of its government to sell to us the plans for the Buna polymerization plants they had erected in Germany under the government program," unquote. These hopes were dashed at the conference between Standard and Farben, which finally took place in Ball, Switzerland, in mid-April 1940 during the German occupation of Norway, which signaled the end of the Zitzkrieg. The new political conditions arising from the German realization that the situation was a serious one, brought about at the conference the effective termination of the relations between Farben and Standard. Naturally, Standard got nowhere with its proposals to buy plant designs. However, as Howard explains, quote, "One other point was very much on our minds. We wanted to make sure, if possible, that the Germans had not, since the outbreak of the war in Europe, made any radical change in their Buna manufacturing processes or formulas. Direct questions were out of order, since the IG men could not discuss any phase of Germany's industrial war effort. But during the settlements of patent transfers and discussions of license definitions needed to implement the Hague Agreement, we obtained sufficient data to feel sure that all of the fundamentals of the Buna operation had remained unchanged. This conclusion was later fully confirmed," unquote. This was the, quote, "last direct contact Standard had with the Germans on Buna rubber," unquote. All American knowledge of the Buna processes, which made the American war effort possible, came from these relationships with IG Farben, and this is accepted fact in the rubber industry. Nevertheless, Standard later came under some rather stupid criticism and even later legal action on account of them. The sudden unavailability in 1942 of a source of rubber set off a major political crisis in the United States. There had been a Buna program in existence since mid-1940, when the Rubber Reserve Corporation had been created within the Reconstruction Finance Corporation. This agency, headed by Jesse H. Jones, supervised the stockpiling of reserve crude rubber, and also sponsored the construction of Buna plants, which started in 1941. However, nobody in authority had foreseen the complete loss of the Far East rubber, so the synthetic rubber program had been modest in scope. Consequently, in 1942 there was almost no practical experience with large-scale use of the Farben processes. The emergency had been realized immediately after the attack on Pearl Harbor, because 3 days later, the U.S. government banned the sale of new automobile tires for civilian purposes. General rationing of rubber followed quickly. Early in 1942, it became realized that, if there was to be any American war effort, a gigantic synthetic rubber industry would have to be created in record time. The apparently dismal prospects for such an achievement were the cause of some amount of panic, and naturally, scapegoats were sought. Jesse Jones was a favorite target, and his claim that 300,000 tons of synthetic rubber would be produced in 1943, and 600,000 tons in 1944 was jeered at. U.S. rubber consumption in 1940 was 648,500 tons. Standard Oil also came in for outrageously unfair abuse by people who interpreted the Farben Standard Agreements as a conspiracy to retard synthetic rubber development in the U.S. Harry S. Truman, chairman of a Senate committee which investigated war production problems, first became prominent in connection with the rubber crisis of 1942. The crisis also set off internal political conflicts. The big oil interests had a long lead in the production of Buna S, but the farm bloc was dominant in Congress. Now, Buna can be made not only from coal and oil, but also from alcohol, an agricultural product. Foreseeing the birth of a major new industry, the farm interests started arguing in favor of making Buna from alcohol, the most expensive method. They cited the fact that the Russians, also long active in the synthetic rubber field, started from alcohol. They also produced a Polish refugee who was supposed to have made some revolutionary invention in connection with making Buna from alcohol. There was another political bloc tied up with South American interests, which proposed subsidies for plantations. There was also a small farm bloc which pressed for more extensive planting of the Guyule plant in the southwest. The effect of these internal political battles was to generate massive confusion and retard the progress of the existing U.S. Buna program. The rubber crisis filled the press in 1942 and was, in fact, the major crisis the U.S. faced in connection with the war. There was constant lamenting that Germany was well ahead of the U.S., and that the U.S. lacked the vital experience with the processes that the Germans possessed. Methods being used in Germany were cited in connection with discussing the prospects of the U.S. program. The farm bloc's battle against what it called the oily interests achieved a temporary major success in July 1942, when the Congress passed the Weird Rubber Supply Act of 1942. The act would have established a new agency for rubber production, entirely under the control of Congress, and outside the domain of the War Production Board, the Army, the Navy, or any executive agency of the government. Of course, the act also specified that the rubber was to be made from grain alcohol. President Roosevelt vetoed this bill on August 6, and announced the appointment of a committee to study the rubber problem, and make some recommendations in regard to the organization of an American synthetic rubber program, quote, probably the most widely acclaimed action on the domestic front in the history of the war program, unquote. The members of the committee were Dr. James D. Conant, president of Harvard, Dr. Carl T. Compton, president of MIT, and the financier and political leader Bernard M. Baruch, who served as chairman. The committee is normally referred to as the Baruch Committee. These three men were chosen partially because they were not considered connected with any specific interests in the conflict, and also because of their expertise. The appointment of Baruch as chairman of such a technically oriented group may seem peculiar at first, but this is not the case. Besides being a man of diverse talents and important financial, industrial, and political connections, he had chaired the War Industries Board during World War I. Moreover, for a period of more than 30 years, he had been interested in industrial ventures involving rubber, and had independently inventoried, with war requirements in mind, American rubber stocks in the spring of 1941. As a consequence, he had gotten into fights with various people, mainly Jesse H. Jones. In addition, unlike the usual chairman of a name Washington ad hoc committee, Baruch threw all his energy into the work of the committee. His assistant Sam Lubell also was put to work on the committee's assignment. Even after the issuing of the final report, Baruch maintained interest. Howard reports that Baruch later expressed a wish to speak to the Standard people, and that a meeting was accordingly held, at which the major technical economic problems were discussed. The work of the Baruch Committee was completed with remarkable speed, and the final report was issued on September 10, 1942. The best explanation for this speed would appear to be Baruch's independent prior involvement in the problem. We must attempt to see this problem as the committee must have seen it in 1942. Primarily, it was a political problem requiring the reconciliation of the various interests contending for the synthetic rubber business. Thus, the final report of the committee recommended the creation of a capacity to produce 100 million gallons of additional grain alcohol per year. A second problem involved the lack of practical American experience with the Buna processes. Technical specifications were at hand, but there existed many questions on many details, and quite a few alternative versions of the processes. Thus, in order to accelerate the American synthetic rubber program, the Baruch Committee saw a need to learn as much as possible of the experiences of others. It made a specific recommendation that an immediate effort be made to learn the experiences of the Russians in the production of synthetic rubber, and make use of them in the American program. Jesse Jones had been charged with overlooking this possibility. The effort was made but yielded no results of any value. Under such conditions, it is necessary to assume that somebody in America looked into new developments in Germany in as close detail as possible at the time, and the new German development in rubber in 1942 was Auschwitz, the site of the most advanced developments in Buna rubber at that time.